All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our MLB podcast for Friday, April 6th. I'm Doug Norrie, that is
James Davis.
And we're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short. Head on over to the site and grab your free three-day trial of a projection system that's been pretty much nailed since the start of the season for MLB. I think basically one of the first slates that we didn't cash in cash games was last night.
Good to be lucky and good. That's what we like to say.
Well, baseball is funny. We were talking about that. This is not the greatest sales pitch in the world. But we were talking about this off the air in that, you know, sometimes your base assumptions are correct and then things still vary wildly, and then sometimes your base assumptions aren't correct. I feel like our base assumptions for baseball have always been correct, and it's sort of just maintaining and withstanding some of the variance. And then you can cluster some of that variance into, you know, you get your Michael Francos and Manny Margot's who each homer when they're in your cash game lineups at underowned, and you can kind of pat yourself on the back for that, and it does look good. And at the same time, you can't go crazy because it's like, look, you're going to have all sections of this where this doesn't go this way, and you kind of need to be able to maintain it for baseball. Anyway, it's free three-day trial.
DFSR. Exactly. So it's nine days so far into the baseball season. That'd be more than half of the NFL season. And after half of the NFL season, if you're crushing every week, it just feels longer. It feels more significant. So, yeah, the variance will get you. But you were saying DFSR.com/MLB.
Free three-day trial. Yeah. Optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings, MLB. We still have NBA covered. It's all under one subscription package, so go check that out. Free for 3 days, and then just $29.95 a month after. You know, someone did ask me going into yesterday, only because I just mentioned Margot. They were like, you know, Margot's 0 for 11 to start the season. Why is he in the lineup? But I'm like, because that's like saying he's 0 for 0 for the rest of for the start of the season. Like, the season might as well have just started. Like, 0 for 11, people are still struggling to understand, and will always, as long as we've done this business, will struggle to understand sample sizes and relevant sample sizes when it comes to batters in particular. You know, there sometimes are other factors. You know, someone's hurt or they're playing hurt, or, you know, we have something like that. Or you can't look at 11 at bats, 11 plate appearances and say, this guy doesn't have it. It's going to be an 0 for 500 kind of season for Margot or whoever. Just fill in the blank. It's like Margot is like not even a good example because he's like not even all that good. Like we get these kind of questions for guys from his level all the way up to the Bryce Harpers and Giancarlo Stantons of the world. So you really need to just temper. You need to make sure that you are grounding yourself well in sample sizes and context and making sure that you don't look at an 0 for 4 when you rostered someone the day before and translate that 0 for 4 onto the next day and all the subsequent days after, because that'll be total death for you when it comes to baseball. But we have a pretty interesting slate of games today. Baseball has done a different thing this year in that they have, you know, usually in the past we've seen Thursdays were sort of a travel day and then Fridays everyone played. I don't know if they're I don't know. I haven't looked ahead at the schedule enough. But they haven't really been doing that. They've been kind of evening the schedule out per day. So we don't get every team playing on a Friday, which is basically last season I don't think ever happened. We do have two 4 o'clock games and then a bunch of 7 o'clock, a bunch of games for the evening with that slate that starts at 7. But I do want to touch on this two-game 4 o'clock slate, mostly because it's the first game we get in Coors. And I wanted to get some of your thoughts on, you know, we have everyone that's played DFS for any, even half a season would know, that there's the Coors effect, and even if you're just a baseball fan, you understand the Coors effect on overall run scoring, but also how that affects how we look at making rosters for DFS, because usually a game in Coors is going to have a run implied run line much higher than the other ones. That makes sense. There's just more runs scored there. But usually we also get a bump in pricing, or the site's algorithm will increase pricing something like 10 to 15%, sometimes more, on some of the players as they head into Colorado. How do we want to attack this going forward this season? Is it going to be completely price dependent, or are we going to want to continue just targeting games in Coors even when the teams are not all that good? Like Colorado themselves are just not a very good team. Like, they seem better because they play in Coors, and then Atlanta has Freddie Freeman and maybe a little bit of Ozzie Albies, and that's kind of it. But does Coors to you make it so that we just need to go above and beyond some of these guys, or do you think we get sucked in too quickly just because the game's in Colorado?
Yeah, I mean, certainly it's going to draw people's attention. It's almost always going to have the highest over-under on the slate. But, you know, the tricky thing, you've made this joke, I guess, many times in the past, is that there's a sticky thing called prices, right? Like, a game can have an implied total of 100 and be totally unplayable if all the players are overpriced. And so, you know, this is really where having a lineup optimizer, whether you use ours or have one on your own, really brings you the whole way, because it's very easy to get sucked into the highest raw point total guys at the expense of making the best overall lineup. So, yeah, unfortunately, there's no like definitive guideline for this going forward for the whole season or anything like that, other than Coors really does matter. Like, it's not just a meme or something that casters say on the TV. It's something that really, really is significant. And it just doesn't always mean that you can just stack it. Like, when we first got into this business, I don't know if you mentioned this because I was zoning out. You were just talking and talking and talking. But when we first got into this business, they didn't price adjust at all for guys moving into Coors. So the Coors guys themselves, the Rockies, would be high priced. But like Atlanta, you wouldn't have seen any price adjustment. And so in that case, of course, you would stack them all. But now that they do, it's just, you know, it's relatively efficient.
Yeah, we get Freeman sees something like a 25% increase in price from around 4,000 on FanDuel up to 5,000 heading into Coors. Still think he's definitely in play. Likely is just from a name perspective, and his overall talent is probably the highest owned hitter on the early slate. There's only two games, so there's only so many ways you can go. But I still think this is just a fine situation. They are underdogs to Colorado. Do you think, mentioned this a little bit on the evening slate too, but FanDuel's pricing is very soft. Like I don't know if it's an organizational philosophy. They've always been a little soft, although we saw in basketball this year, they got a lot more aggressive in how they priced their players. Mostly it was just based on opportunity. Like the guys, if you were given opportunity one game, you could almost guarantee, if they had the 48-hour window, because that's usually how quickly their API updates, if given that window, you would definitely see a quick price adjustment on a player in a clearly new situation. The pricing on FanDuel's baseball this year has been unbelievably so. There's no pitchers over 10,000 today. It's different on DraftKings, but do you think it's a situation where this early slate you can just like roll Carrasco and then just completely stack Atlanta, Colorado, and maybe even Cleveland too? Like, is FanDuel's, do you find that FanDuel's pricing, at least for MLB, is just too soft to start the season?
Yeah, I don't know about too soft, just because we've been winning. So obviously people have been finding a way to lose. But the fact that, like, one thing that's often very difficult on two-game slates for baseball, it's a two-game slate, is just simply making a lineup at all. And the fact that you can, like, I'm making this lineup, and if this were a full slate lineup, I wouldn't be over the moon about it necessarily, but it's totally playable. Like, I have five players from Coors, the most expensive pitcher on the slate, and then the next team with the highest total. Like, sure, looks good to me. So again, too soft, I'm not sure, but what it does make is for, you know, pretty easy lineups, and I don't mind that, Doug, after getting through this basketball season where anything goes, it seems like a little bit more sanity in baseball is fine for me.
Like, there's absolutely no problem in playing Carrasco, who's clearly the best arm in the slate, and then playing Freeman, who's the best bat, the best non-Coors bat on the slate. So I don't think you're in any kind of problem there. It's a little different on DraftKings, where you are going to almost definitely have to roster some hitters against one of your pitchers. That doesn't make it as enticing to me, especially because you really don't want to do like German Marquez versus all, like, roster him and then roster all the Braves bats, right? So you probably have to like lock in Duffy and lock in Carrasco and then try to get your stack going that way, and understand that you're probably also still going to need to play probably a Cleveland bat or two against Duffy just to make the pricing work, just because you can't, sure, you simply can't afford everyone. So I do like these two game slates. I like when there's very clear cut options, because, you know, it's easy to stare at Carrasco and say, oh, he's such the obvious pitching cash game pitcher, and yet he will not be 100% owned, right? And I think anytime that happens,
that's what I'm saying. So that's why I don't mind easy pricing, like, because still people will stumble in and mess it up. So
right, I thought that about like David Price yesterday on the early slate, and thought, yeah, how are you talking yourselves out of David Price? And he's like 70% starting cash games, and I thought, good. I mean, this is, you're already getting 30% of people that doesn't seem like they made the right decision to start. I mean, I guess I'm being results based, but I want to promise that I felt that even before he threw his first pitch. So
keep in mind, just before we move on, early season baseball tends to be the easiest time of year. It's because it's like you still got basketball money in there. You have a lot of people who forget how much variance can be involved in baseball. So you still have a lot of really kind of just weak money in the ecosystem right now. So this is really the time to be playing too. Like, it's not the time to be sitting on the bench, like, you know, hoping to see how baseball turns out. Like, now is the time that will be the most value, probably until football season starts.
Yeah, someone asked that in the chat the other day. They said, you know, I like to wait a couple weeks to get going. And I said that you can't. I was like, first of all, our projection model doesn't really even incorporate current year stats all that much, just because it's too, I mean, it incorporates them in the sense that it brings it in along with the baseline projection, but it's so incremental and small that you'll almost never really notice it, outside of a crazy like Shohei Ohtani, where we just need to kind of figure out what he actually is.
Because exactly, the two exceptions I was going to say are rookies, just because it's very tough to establish a baseline there, and also like pitchers who have some kind of huge adjustment. Yes. Either way, right? Whether like their control seems out of whack, like maybe they're injured or something, or they're just like added a new pitch and they're striking out 10 per nine instead of like 6 per 9 or something, right? So like, you know, not that we would bump them up to 10 per nine, but we would adjust it.
And
but
even we've made
like
mistakes.
Hitters don't move an inch.
And we've made mistakes in that in the past, but it's more me. I get too aggressive sometimes with like things that I perceive to be as changes in a player. And then it just turns out not to be the case. You seem to have a steadier hand with that than I do, but they are the, yeah, those couple games where it looks like something's completely different. But you're right, yes, mostly having to do with pitchers or foreign guys who come over, having, like Ohtani, that have played in some other professional league overseas, and then just guys who have made some kind of crazy adjustment. All right, let's talk about the evening slate of games. Pretty interesting, I think. I always like I'm like I said at the beginning, drawn to slates where I feel like the pitching is pretty clear-cut at the top. It doesn't need to be one particular guy that stands out, although I do like that. But I do like to have an option of at least one or two very strong arms, and I'm even more encouraged when there's a pretty steep drop-off after those arms to everyone else, because I feel like if you're able to talk yourselves into those other guys, then we're already well ahead of the game. And we have a situation here where, again, the pricing on FanDuel is simply too soft on McCullers. McCullers goes in and plays the Padres. The Padres are horrible. Now, I get that they're playing in Houston, but the Padres stink. McCullers is good. He's 8,600 on FanDuel with his money line right now is minus 280. Like, he could be he could honestly be not McCullers. He could be like a, I'm just looking at another name here. Like, if Kyle Hendricks was pitching against San Diego with this money line at this price, he would be the pitcher. Does that make sense what I'm saying? Like, so it doesn't even need to be a McCullers thing. Like, it just happens to be McCullers and he's an elite arm. This strikes me as just a complete joke. This is actually one where I don't think even the deadest of money can get away from this situation. And that's the only thing that's sort of pissing me off a little bit.
You wait, because people will get away from it. I mean, I think, like you mentioned, 70% ownership. Like, do you think it'll be significantly higher than that here?
I think so. Yeah, I think so. It's just too cheap. It's like, even the most novice of baseball fan, maybe I have give people too much credit, I don't know. But even the most novice of baseball fan is going to look down this list. Because even if, like, a novice baseball fan maybe does a season-long league, so they understood sort of where McCullers went. And when you look down the rest of the league, you look down the rest of this price. And by the way, most people that play DFS are using some kind of system anyway, so maybe I'm just talking about the minority. But you look down the rest of this list, and I can make some cases for a couple of these other guys.
Yeah, you'll see some people roll out, like Kenta Maeda against
But he's
the
more
Giants,
expensive.
Like
he's more
Collins.
He's 400 more.
I get it.
Like, I get it.
But I'm saying that I think some people will go there.
All right. So, but if you also, and I've always said this, I'll say this many times during the year, but if you don't use your own projection system or you don't use ours or just whatever, one of the best ways to just try to discern value on a given slate is just to look at where DraftKings has a guy price and where FanDuel has a price. And if there's a wild difference, who has made the mistake? Because you have McCullers at 12.3 over on DraftKings, which actually does make it something of a question about how high you want to go on him, because that's now you're looking at a quarter of your overall salary cap. And McCullers, while good, he's doesn't always eat all the innings, so you might get in a little trouble there. But you say to yourself, at 12.3 or 8.6, who made the bigger mistake? And I think here it's clearly FanDuel. But at 12.3, are you comfortable with McCullers' baseline, just sort of like his profile and how he profiles as a pitcher? Because for 12.3, you really need to eat innings. Like, you know, Chris Sale eats innings. Even David Price can go longer in the games. Does McCullers strike you as that kind of pitcher? Because for his career, he really hasn't been.
Yeah, not really, unfortunately. I mean, he has incredible stuff, obviously. I mean, we knew that ever since he was coming up as a prospect. But the problem with having incredible stuff like this is manifested in that very first start against Texas, right? Strikes out 10, so you love to see that. But when you're striking out 10 batters, it's really hard to make it more than 5 or 6 innings unless you are one of those, you know, super efficient. You know, you're striking people out on 2-3 pitches, and you can't even strike people out on 2 pitches if you do that. So,
but a guy like McCullers, this guy's amazing, like, man. Strike 2 pitches, 2 pitch strikeouts. He's good.
That's like my new turn of phrase. You know,
well, the batter just walks back in because he knows he has no chance in the third pitch.
All right, I give up, dude. Just let the next guy go. on 3 to 5 pitches, say. But McCullers is going to run a lot of deep counts, and it's going to make it really hard for him to go deep into games. The real devil's bargain on DraftKings, though, is if you don't play him at 12-3, that means you have to play two other pitchers on the slate. So I'm curious to know. I mean, I feel like there's, you know, one relatively obvious guy in Castillo at 8,700 who I'm happy to roll out there on DraftKings tonight. But that pitcher two slot is looking pretty grim to me. I mean, are there any guys you like past Castillo?
I'm going to say one more thing about McCullers, and then I'm going to talk about Castillo. But the McCullers, for the whole season last year, averaged 5.3 innings per start. That is not getting it done at 12-3, right? Like, especially with DraftKings, right, where the win isn't as important, and you really just need to eat. Like, the innings are more important because the win isn't as important. You don't get the quality start like you do on FanDuel. You don't get those little things that kind of trickle in. You need to pitch a lot of innings, and you need to have a lot of strikeouts. And he is a candidate to not get there, even though I get that it's a very best matchup. You said Castillo is an obvious one. I'm going to be interested to see his ownership. I'm totally fine with it. We rolled him out in his first start against Washington in Cincinnati. So, like, and we had chatters asking about it, and I was completely comfortable with it because, you know, we talked about this. If you can get guys in like that 7,000-8,000 range that have K per inning stuff, then exactly. I'm completely fine with it. And this is a much better matchup than it was. And even that Washington game, he let up like three or four home runs. He was basically a two true outcome. He was either striking the guy out or they were hitting a home run. That was all that was kind of happening to him in that first game. I still don't know if people are going to completely see that. He's a very good pitcher. I
just don't know who else you play. That's the problem. Like,
well, right.
Castillo has the K upside, and no play can be viewed in a vacuum here, right? Because as you go down, and even if you just sort by just raw points, so like who are going to score the most points on this slate? I mean, you're going to play McCullers. We talked about McCullers at 12-3 with a pretty bad points per dollar projection. We talk about Kenta Maeda. I mean, his points per dollar projection is even worse than McCullers, so you're not really getting away with anything there. And then now you're basically the next most expensive pitchers, or, you know, the quote-unquote safest, are like CC Sabathia in Yankee Stadium. Good luck. Or Castillo. So you're one way or the other, you're going to have some pitcher with question marks, whether it's McCullers making the rest of your lineup less deep, or it's, you know, playing Castillo or Sabathia, who are either questionable pitchers or in questionable matchups. So, and after you get that, just totally forget about it. You're talking about guys that are barely major league qualified, you know, guys like Brandon Woodruff and, you know, Trevor Williams, Parker Bridwell, Derek Holland, Matt Moore. Like, you're not going to play any of those guys. This is actually, it's a crazy slate for having just seven games on it, because there are something like 10 borderline AA pitchers here. So that's also just the issue on DraftKings of playing two pitchers makes this really, really tough.
I think because of that, I think ultimately we come into the part where it's just say, I was just looking up Trevor Williams. I was like, He's averaging the old 1.5 Ks per nine, 7 walks per nine. I know it's only been one start, but he was really damn bad in the first game. I think ultimately what happens is we just land on McCullers and Castillo, because right now, this early in the day, and we talk about this a lot too, but value typically tends to open up on the cheaper plays if we get
someone get someone who's batting second randomly.
Exactly. And right now, when you run lineups, the top McCullers Castillo lineup is less than a point away from the overall top lineup right now. Okay. And that actually could be just...
making me feel better.
We just might be a little high on guys like Gausman and some of these cheap pitchers, because there are going to be times where the system is going to say, you got a 5,600 guy that might go 5.25 innings? Sign me up on that, right? Like, I'll take the risk, but not... And it's getting that he's facing the Yankees.
For a second, because Gausman is projected for 13 fantasy points. It's not like we have him overly aggressive, but I take your meaning. I mean, you're maybe not even happy with that in this game here.
No, that's what I'm saying. I was like, it's not like he has a crazy high projection. It's just like, because here's the other thing too. The flip side of this is, when there's this many bad pitchers, it also means all the hitters are in good spots, right? So like, you are, when you just have a run of bad arms, it means the implied run lines are going to be high. It means you're going to have just the Mike Trouts and the Giancarlo Stantons of the world, all the Houston guys are going to be in good spots. And now all of a sudden it's going to say, well, now we got to start paying up for all these bats, because all these guys are going to score 10 runs or whatever. I mean, it's hyperbole, but yeah. So anyway, I mean, is there anyone else you can even sort of talk yourself into? I don't want Maeda at 11-2. I'm still worried about his pitch 90 pitches in the first game, and I always get worried about the Dodgers pitch count, even though San Fran's in a good spot. Can you talk yourself into even like a Sabathia, like a GPP flyer? If we're going to go GPP only here, and we say that we're kind of stuck on the McCullers-Castillo pairing, is there anyone that you can even make a remote case for that has some upside on his prices on either site?
Yeah, I mean, I think Sabathia, actually, you'll see some cash game ownership here on him as well. He's still not, like, don't be fooled by the ERA the last couple seasons, I guess, is where I'll start. I think the true talent is more reflected in the XFIP, I should say, which has been a little bit over 4. Obviously, he was pretty effective in his first start of this season. And he's just simply not the same pitcher he's been in the past. That being said, I mean, listing all of the guys that we've talked about so far, is he any less safe than Luis Castillo? Probably not. I mean, especially if you believe the you know, who's favored more. Sabathia rates to get the win in this game probably significantly more than Castillo. He probably rates to go deeper into the game than Castillo on average too. So that increases his chances both to win the game and to just kind of accumulate those counting stats. So I think he's a totally playable option for cash games. I will say the matchup should be significantly worse against Baltimore here. Baltimore can strike out a lot, but they can also bruise you too. So, you know, don't count on him just like walking in and striking out the side, or, you know, having them free swinging and just letting him do it for free. There definitely is some risk there. But yeah, I think Sabathia definitely playable for big tournaments and playable for cash games too.
Baltimore, very righty heavy lineup though. Guys like Adam Jones have reverse splits. Machado, I believe, is mostly platoon neutral for his career. Mancini is a lefty. He's better against lefties, but then the bottom of that lineup is really bad. Like, Chris Davis is basically an automatic strike. If he plays, is an automatic strikeout against lefties. And then Valencia has better splits, and then Caleb Joseph and Craig Gentry. Baltimore is not a very good team. They look a little better on paper because they have guys like Machado, and Adam Jones is a name, and Shoup's coming off a pretty good year. But overall, this is just not a good lineup, and it's really played itself out at the beginning of the season. They've struggled to score runs. Looking at some of the stacks, we mentioned a lot of these teams are in good spots today. Is there a team that kind of stands out to you in, you know, when we run our lineups? Is there one team that stands out as maybe, do we want to spread it out, or do we want to kind of concentrate on one or two teams when we're putting together at least our cash game lineups?
Honestly, and this is going to sound like a stupid thing to say, but it honestly doesn't seem to matter very much. Like, there are so many terrible pitchers going tonight, so I guess that means you spread it out. But there are so many bad pitchers going tonight that you can get value from any number of games. I mean, you want to take some Reds against Trevor Williams, be my guest. Matt Moore and Marco Estrada are facing off against one another in a great hitter's park. I mean, so you can absolutely take everyone on the Blue Jays against Matt Moore. And then going the other way, Estrada, year in, year out, is one of those guys trying to lead the league in home runs per nine inning allowed, you know, so both sides of that game look excellent. Meanwhile, we can't even bring up guys like Brandon Woodruff against the Cubs. They need no introduction there. Luis Perdomo is pitching against the Astros. Like, and this, I haven't even gotten into all of it. Derek Holland is one of the worst pitchers in all the majors. This guy, he can average two home runs per nine innings and no one would be surprised. I think he would have been, I wrote this up when I wrote the baseball picks last Friday, but I think, I can correct myself if I'm wrong here, but I think Holland would have led the majors in home runs allowed per nine innings had he had the audacity to pitch enough innings to qualify, and he unfortunately didn't. So, yeah, you're talking 2.07 home runs per nine, Doug, last year. That is insane. This guy's just an absolute batting practice home run derby type pitcher. So, yeah, it just goes up and down. I can't highlight any stack in particular or go too deep just because there's so many options, even for a seven-game slate.
One of my favorite things is hearing you just get really upset about how bad pitchers are.
I get upset. I just can't believe someone could pitch 26 starts for a major league team. Two home runs per nine. That is so, I'm incredulous. Six ERA he had. And again, had he just simply been good enough to stay on the field, he would have led all the leaders. This is, by the way, what I hate sort of about the whole, like, oh, qualified pitcher sort of designation. Like, Holland qualifies, my man. If you start 26 games for your team, put him at the top of that list. Let everyone know. Hang him in the streets. That's what I say.
I want to rewind real quick back just to Toronto and Texas. You touched them at the very beginning of that rant. The run line in that game is actually a run higher than the game in Coors. That right now the implied run line is 11.
Everybody.
The over under is 11 in that game, and it's actually a pretty thin spread. So the runs are coming pretty much equal on both sides. And when we talked about FanDuel. When FanDuel, because of the stupid pricing over there, you can make a roster of any player you want today. So that doesn't really, you're not really running into any problems there. But the top of that lineup, like Chu and Gallo, are going to give Estrada real problems. Going the other way, the Toronto guys, you know, Donaldson just completely crushes lefties. So that game, I think if I was just going to pick a game based simply on the run line, I'd probably take that one and feel really good about it. But like you said, it's going to be tough because you really can't. This is the downside of nights like tonight. You simply can't make a lineup that you aren't going to like. You're like, oh, I can play Trout too. Like, I can play Trout against. He's a great cash game play. He's about as consistent as it gets in the league on a day to day basis. You're fine there. You get some Dodgers guys against the lefty, even though the park is bad. You could just see any one of these teams. There's like seven teams that could easily put up seven or eight runs tonight, and that just means we're probably looking at some pretty high overall cash game, just money line, just the scores for the cash line. And you're going to just get people that you don't even have to have a system to kind of put together a lineup tonight for something you like. And that's the only downside to stuff. That's the only downside to when you just have so many bad pitchers running all at once. All right. Any other final thoughts? You're still too mad about the pitching situation.
Derek Holland's being paid $6 million this year by the San Francisco Giants. The
Giants strike you out.
Two. Maybe. I think
no,
if I took...
not maybe. You were the three pitches.
No, dude, I'm taking a strike in that situation all day against Derek Holland, just for what it's worth. So I think he throws me one ball. He tries to make me chase when it's 0-2, just to try to embarrass me after he hears me on the podcast. But yeah, the Giants this season, $221 million payroll, six of which goes to Derek Holland so he can have a 6 ERA and allow two home runs per nine. So if you're trying to get your kids into a lucrative career, pitching, and call the Giants.
Make sure, they're a lefty. All right, DFSR.com/MLB will get you a free 3-day trial. We're going to be in the chat talking baseball all the way up until lineup lock, making sure that everything's set and that the lineups look good. So go check that out, DFSR.com/MLB, free for 3 days, and then just $29.95 a month after. We'll be back again next week talking more baseball. Buddy, enjoy the Derek Holland no-hitter.
$6 million. Unbelievable.